Red Nectar by Matt McBride. When I read the email from Professor Emeritus Claiborne, I almost wept. He wanted to present yet another paper to the annual symposium of the Lepidopterist Society. The man was a nuisance. Constantly claiming the discovery of new species that always turned out to be minor genetic variations of existing insects. This one seemed no different. He'd attached a poor quality photograph of a butterfly that I recognized as a Malay lacewing. Beautiful certainly. But common in Southeast Asia. However, the text of the email intrigued me. The professor insisted this butterfly was unique to a remote island. And had evolved totally different dietary habits to any other species on the planet. He revealed no details, so I decided I'd better pay him a visit. Professor Claiborne had inherited a small fortune. He lived in a rambling country house, and had spent his life studying, teaching, and pursuing his passion for entomology. He'd never married. And now in his 60s, his obsession was to have an insect named after him, before he died. I supposed it was his way of preserving his family name. I arrived at the prearranged time and Claiborne invited me in, telling me he had something interesting to show me. He led me through dusty hallways. It was evident he lived alone. We entered a humid conservatory tacked onto the back of the house. An indoor tropical garden, crowded with exotic plants and chirping insects. "This is my hothouse where I nurture my specimens," he explained. "And these are my latest acquisitions." Claiborne showed me several rows of chrysalids, carefully pinned to the branches of sturdy shrubs. There must have been over 100 mottled brown cocoons, each the size of a pine cone. "I brought these back from a field trip last week," he said. "I expect them to hatch in about 10 days. Just in time for the next meeting." I looked closely at the cocoons. There was nothing unusual about them. "Professor Claiborne," I said, "if you want me to include you on the agenda, I need to know what your paper will discuss. As secretary of the society, I have to make sure the presentations will be legitimate." What Claiborne told me was more than surprising. And he insisted he would not only have proof, but intended to provide a live demonstration of his discovery. Then, he swore me to secrecy. I was impressed enough to promise him the prime time slot. A few days before the meeting, I sent the professor an email asking him to confirm his attendance. His reply assured me that the butterflies were starting to emerge, and everything was going to plan. He said he'd decided on a name for the new subspecies, which he would announce during his lecture. I hardly slept the night before the symposium. Not only was the organization stressful, but I was also tremendously excited at the prospect of Claiborne's talk. It was certainly going to be the most important revelation in the world of entomology for many years. The elderly professor still hadn't appeared when the first lecture began at 10 a.m. And I began to get worried. I paced up and down outside the auditorium, anxiously waiting for him to arrive. He was due to begin his talk at midday, and I knew he was bringing equipment for his demonstration, which would need setting up. Midday came and went, and I was forced to reschedule the lectures. I was angry and disappointed. The highlight of the year had failed to materialize. This was the last straw. The meeting broke up early, so I jumped in my car and set off for the professor's home. I intended to tell him his membership of the society would be revoked unless he had an extremely good reason for his absence. There was no answer to my hammering on his front door. I wondered if he'd had an accident while driving to the auditorium. But I'd seen no signs of a crash during my journey. I decided to check around the back. I peered through the steamy windows of the hothouse, but could see nothing, except the occasional flutter of iridescent wings against the glass. The professor was nowhere to be seen. Then I noticed a door adjacent to the conservatory, and tried the handle. It was unlocked, and opened into a kitchen. The first thing I noticed were the flies. They buzzed around a cardboard box, containing several dead rats. The door from the kitchen opened onto a dusty hallway I remembered from my last visit, and I made my way to the hothouse. Professor Clybourne was lying on the floor just inside the hothouse. A mass of bloated butterflies covered his face, and I waved them off in a cloud of color. One settled heavily on my hand, and I cried out at a sharp lance of pain. I brushed the brood away and checked Clybourne. He was as pale as a ghost, and had no pulse. His exposed skin was dotted with puncture marks. A sheaf of papers lay near his lifeless fingers. I grabbed them, and made a dive for the door, just as I felt another stab in the back of my neck. I slapped at the vicious creature, and slammed the door behind me. I slumped against the wall, and slowly recovered enough composure to call 911. While I waited, I glanced at the pages in my hand. They were the lecture notes Clybourne had prepared. They explained how an offshoot of the Malay lacewing had adapted to life on a barren island by becoming sanguivores. The lack of nectar-bearing flowers was supplanted by the blood of the small rodents and lizards that inhabited the rocky atoll. The freshly emerging butterflies must have been ravenous. They'd flocked to the first source of food they detected. Then I noticed that the professor had printed the name he'd chosen for the new subspecies on the front page of his notes. Cetacea, Vampyra, Clybourne. At least he'd achieved his life's ambition. His family name would be preserved forever.